first got it when he was six. Didn't know any tricks. Matter of fact, first time he got on it, he slipped. Landed on his hip and busted his lip. For a week he had to talk with a lisp like this. Now we can end the story right here. But shorty didn't quit, it was something in the air. Yeah, he said it was something so appealing. He couldn't fight the feeling, something about it. He knew he couldn't doubt it, couldn't understand it. Branded, since the first kickflip he landed. Labeled a misfit, a bandit. Cocoon, cocoon, cocoon. His neighbors couldn't stand it, so he was banished to the park. Started in the morning, one stopped after dark. Yeah, when they said it's getting late in here. So I'm sorry, young man, there's no skating here. And so we kick, push, kick, push, kick, push, kick, push, coast, and away.
Hello and welcome to the January 2014 episode of the Bike Portland podcast about bikes and low-car life in PDX. I'm Lillian Carbake.
And I'm Michael Anderson. Each month we go in-depth on a subject that matters to Portlanders who get around without a car.
And we do it in the time it takes the average Portlander to get to work.
This month we're talking about a vehicle that Portland is famous for.
A tool that's transforming urban transportation.
A way of life that is moving out of the shadows of adolescence into the glorious mainstream of American culture.
We're talking about, of course, the skateboard.
Yes, we are moving this month from two wheels.
And making up for several months without a guest by overachieving with two guests this month.
For a total of four wheels and four speakers. Hi, Tessa and Corey.
Hey there.
Hi.
Hi, guys.
We're joined by two of the city's top experts on a transportation mode that gets the short shift.
Because it's almost too simple.
Too easy to use.
Skateboards are practically invisible in cities.
But as we're about to argue, that's about to change. Enjoy the show.
But I'm engaged to these aerials and barriers, and I don't think this board is strong enough to carry two. She said, Val, I weigh 120 pounds. Now, let me make one thing clear. I don't need to ride yours, I got mine right here. So she took him to a spot he didn't know about. Some mod in the apartment parking lot. She said, I don't normally take dates in here. Security came and said, I'm sorry, there's no skating here. And so they kicked, pushed.
All right, getting into skateboarding.
We want to say hello to our guests one more time, and maybe each of you could talk a little bit about your background in skateboarding. You're coming at this from different angles, but you're both, I think, bringing new stuff to the conversation. So let's start with Corey, I guess, of the Northwest Skate Coalition.
Hi there. My name's Corey Poole. I'm the one of the co-founders of the Northwest Skate Coalition, and we are here to advocate for skateboarding as transportation, not simply as recreation.
Yeah. Sounds familiar somehow.
Yeah.
And Tessa?
And I'm Tessa Walker. I finished a thesis on skateboarding as a mode of transportation at Portland State University's Master's of Urban Studies program. So I spent about 2 years looking at skateboarding from an academic transportation planning perspective. So I've been looking at skating as a way to get around through an active transportation lens from sort of an academic angle. So a lot to do with how fast people go and why and behaviors and the culture behind it and stuff like that.
Yeah. Do you, both of you guys skate for transportation?
I definitely skate for transportation.
Corey showed up here on a skateboard. Well,
of course. I have never seen Corey not show up on a skateboard.
It happens, but not when it's short distances.
And here's the very common secret among academics is I don't actually do the thing that I research. I don't skateboard.
Mm-hmm.
Though Corey's going to teach me.
Yeah, we're working on this.
All right.
Sweet. On this. Once I have health insurance. You have a longboard in your kitchen, though. So.
Once I have health insurance, I will start skateboarding.
That's a good reason. Lily, do you ever skateboard?
No. have you seen my ability to, like, fall walking across the room?
Right. Well, for similar reasons, I don't think I skateboard. I actually own a skateboard, and I briefly tried to skateboard to work when I lived in a place where that was, like, the best way to do it, but I gave that up because I'm not very talented. But so we're going to talk about the ways that biking and skateboarding are similar and different. We really think there's a lot of interesting opportunities for people to sort of understand each other. And this is something Corey told me last year when we met to talk about this in some depth. Once you think about skateboarding, once you start talking about skateboarding and like thinking about it as a real significant part of the city, you will be creeped out because you will start noticing skateboards everywhere. You will realize that there are skateboards all over the place and they're being used by more people than you would have expected in more different ways than you would have expected. So hopefully that's something we can bring to listeners this month.
Yeah, you won't just be hearing something new, you'll be seeing something new all
over
the place.
Yeah, that's true. Probably. That's right. It's a
gift. Whether you want to or not.
Let's talk about the history of skateboarding. Do you guys want to, who wants to sound off on that?
I could talk a little bit about the Portland history of skateboarding.
Yeah.
Portland has a long, proud tradition of skateboarding, going back all the way to the Burnside Skate Park, which was really a monumental shift in the way of cities working with skaters. Basically, they took an area under the Burnside Bridge, which was seeing a lot of crime, a lot of unsavory activity and behavior. And with the kind of okay and silent nod of city council and the okay of someone had high up in the police department, the skaters were allowed to convert this space from an unused space into one of the world's best skate parks. And I think many people...
When was that?
Oh, gosh. That's in the early 90s, I think, when the Burnside really got going. I mean, Burnside has been a continual work in progress ever since. And it had the benefit of being on the return trip for concrete trucks, going back to Ross Island, sand and gravel. And so they would just drop some cement, and the skaters who were there would start building with it. They only had a short period of time to work with, and they'd... I've heard there are parts of the Burnside Skate Park that are over 3 feet thick of solid concrete because you just keep adding on top of and on top of and on top of. So
How long have skateboards been around at all, used for recreation or transportation, either one?
I believe the first ones were in the early 1960s and came out of the surfing culture, and it was almost immediately locked on as a deviant activity. Hmm. Not quite sure the extent as to why that happened. However, it does seem to be almost universal. And then it kind of saw its moment in the sun, covered by NBC Wide World of Sports in the early 70s, and then it kind of dropped off in that frame and became more of the street skating, vert skating, ramp skating, which was popular 80s, 90s.
And glorified in Back to the Future, of course.
Glorified heavily in Back to the Future.
Yeah.
It's very important.
I think that's the foundation of my understanding of skateboarding is Michael J. Fox.
Yeah, so I'm interested, though, even though the Burnside Skate Park has been around in Portland for, I guess, over 20 years now, skating didn't actually become legal to do on the street, technically on the books, until like 10 years ago, right?
Yeah, that would have been 2001. Interestingly enough, Charlie Hales, who was a city commissioner at the time, kind of pushed that through.
And now our mayor.
It was not a universally accepted idea. It was a close vote. There were some influential people who were not for it, but it placed Portland in a position to be what it is today, which is really a skate transportation mecca. It's one of the few places in the country where people can be comfortable skating on the street, not necessarily worried about whether they're going to get pulled over at any given moment for just getting around on a skateboard.
Yeah. And which is a story that you still hear like regularly happens to bicycles in some cities. And I feel like it's, I'm fascinated by the parallels here that the people just thinking about it being the next step of bicycling, and it's the same transitions that it's has to face and the hurdles it has to clear.
Well, I think there's the transportation like movement where you have to start establishing it as a viable form of transportation. But both bicycles and skateboards exist as a way to profile people based on their transportation choice. And you get profiled in slightly different camp. Oh, you're a teenage vagrant if you're a skateboarder, versus with a bike, it's like you must be poor or had a DUI. It's a transportation mode that's so linked to a way for someone that doesn't know you to profile you just by looking at the way you get around. I think that's a useful way to consider how it affects advocacy.
Yeah, there's definitely some of the vagaries around profiling both bikes and skateboards as behaviors rather than as solutions to specific needs.
Another really interesting parallel, I think, is that both with skateboarding and with bicycling outside of Portland, is you see a parallel of people's perceptions being, you shouldn't do this for your own good. You know, it's not that the motorists are concerned about their own safety because of skateboarders and or bicycles. It's their, a misunderstanding of the mode, which creates this perception of, we need to pass a law to keep you from doing this because obviously you have no sense of self-preservation.
Right, right. And here in Portland, so what we did in 2001 under Hales was actually said, this is okay. We are giving our official stamp of saying that these are allowed to be used on our streets. Yeah, right?
Yes, skateboards enjoy all the rights and responsibilities of bicyclists on city streets in the city of Portland, with a few noted exceptions, i.e. around the downtown core area and some things regarding Arlington Heights.
And the and we were the first city that you know of that did that, is that right?
I don't know. I mean, if there is another one, I haven't heard about it. Tessa, do you know?
We may have been the first. I think there were some college campuses that had pro skateboarding regs or very set out guidelines around the same time. That's the other place that tends to deal with skateboarding as transportation in a very engaged way as college campuses, just because the urban land use structure is set for it. The age range of folks who are getting around there are set for it. But we may have been the first, but please don't quote me on that.
Well, and skateboarding routes, we were definitely the first, right? We have signed skateboarding routes in Portland. No other city has that, as far as
yes,
I know, right?
We have the first completely unused skateboard routes, yes.
Which I feel like...
Where's the skateboard routes?
I love the signs,
right,
though.
Coming off the Hawthorne Bridge is the only place I've noticed them.
It goes
There's
on,
one up
what,
in
third?
Northwest.
Is yeah. it third or fourth at...
The only people who know where they are not skateboarders.
Yeah.
It's the way that
there.
People who don't skateboard can bond with folks who think about it.
Right.
But the signs are really great.
I feel like the sign is really just a stamp of like, we made an official city recognition that this is a form of transportation and we're trying to like make a point, even if absolutely no one uses the skateboarding routes.
This actually also brings up something that's maybe different from between biking and skateboarding, is that skateboarding is more versatile than biking, right? Let's talk for a little bit about the let's talk about the appeal of skateboarding. What is it? Why is skateboarding so great? Why should we be thinking or talking about it at all?
Just a tiny bit of background on my study. I did a survey of about 450 folks throughout the US and Canada, and then focus groups in Portland itself. And in the survey, pretty much everyone started skateboarding for recreation, but then within a couple of years, we're using it as transportation as well. Hmm. And that can sort of fade back and forth. There were very few people who had one very clear-cut use of their skateboard. It's always a multi-use thing. And there is that really, really blurry line between utility and joy for skateboarding that never really seems to go away. And I don't think it should, but it's the kind of thing that makes it really hard to quantify.
I was really struck in your survey. You found that like people would like ride somewhere and then mess around on a park for a while and then ride somewhere else and then on their way to a destination.
Yeah, I had a lot of stories of folks reporting their commutes and saying, oh yeah, I go four or five blocks and then if I find something fun to ride, I'll ride it and then I go the rest of the way. And there's skateboarding is play at the same time as it's really utilitarian.
Well, and there was, a lot of the individual like call out quotes in your thesis were about things like it's really easy to skip potholes on a skateboard compared to on a bike, or like I'm really able to like go upstairs, and like obstacles are very different for me than they are for bikes.
Yeah, so here's the thing: is you start for folks who start as recreational skaters, the first thing they develop are basically key skills for commuting as a skateboarder. Being able to do an ollie, the first little jump where your skateboard can come
up
off
a curb.
Yeah, means that you can jump a curb. Just being able to guide stop in multiple ways, turn corners really easily and confidently, means that you have pretty much everything you need to negotiate pretty safely around cars, to jump curbs. When you think about how easily penetrable streets are as a pedestrian, curbs aren't obstacles. Potholes or issues with the road aren't obstacles. When you think from the perspective of a bike, obstacles in the road, like potholes, they hurt, but they're not that bad. But you can't jump curbs. Skateboards, it's the opposite. Potholes, huge problem. But curbs generally are fine. There are some longboards or other boards that are specifically designed so that you can't catch air. So there are some exceptions to this. But just the assets and the vulnerabilities tend to be fairly similar, but sometimes have a few little details.
I knew far more skateboarding commuters when I lived in Cincinnati, which is very hilly. And the pretty much the only people that don't commute by car are University of Cincinnati students, because it's a very car-centric city. And I think that number is probably swapped because they've done a lot of work on bike stuff in Cincinnati. But the main reason is because the University of Cincinnati campus is so hilly. It's got like 7 levels. It doesn't have, it's, you can walk in one side of a building, get in the elevator, and come out on the same level on the other side. The whole campus is built into the side of a hill, which means that all the ADA accessible ramps on a bike are the most frustrating things you can imagine, because they're these back and forth and back and forth on these hills. And it ends up being much better. It'll like lock up your bike and walk on the pretty sprawling campus because of all the hills. What I saw as skateboarders were always just like, it's like a giant skateboard playground.
Yeah, it's those kinds of places are basically can feel like skate parks, but they also are places where it's much easier to bring a skateboard than to bring a bicycle, because say you go into a building and then you have 3 flights of stairs to get to wherever you are. You can pick up your skateboard, do that, and then come out and have your transportation right there. That relates into how skateboards and transit. We're going to get there later. Never mind.
Yeah.
Well, we're there already.
College, yeah, let's do it.
College campuses, I'd like to just finish out maybe a little bit on the college campuses. I mean, they really are the perfect environment. You know, skateboards are really good in crowded urban environments. If I'm coming into an area, like I've gone through Portland Saturday Market many times, where it's like you just skate right up to the front of it, you transition to walking, you walk through, you're back on your board, you're out the other side. You want to go up a couple flights of stairs, come down off of Burnside Bridge, go down the flights of stairs, boom, you're at the MAX station. You know, it's just that quick on, quick off. Also in college campuses, space for personal storage is at a premium. You know, whether you're on your way to class or whether you're in class or whether you're in your dorm room, you know, I mean, how many bikes can you cram into a dorm room? You can cram like 30 skateboards into a typical dorm room. Dorm room, it exists in almost every major college where there's someone with like 30 skateboards.
Because
it's just so easy to just stash them anywhere. You know, I keep my skateboard when I am driving. I keep it in the trunk of my car. I could break down anywhere and I know I can get home. You know, it's if I want to park my car, if I'm visiting another city, I know I can park my car blocks and blocks away, hop on the skateboard, get to where I'm going.
So something I find very interesting when I was doing work in Safe Routes to School, which is, you know, encouraging kids to walk and bike, but also skateboard to school, and Razor Scooter, which is a thing. Skateboard lockers were being pushed so hard on the Safe Routes to School contracts because there was a lot of schools where they were comfortable with kids getting to school with skateboards, but they didn't want them to have them like in class, and they didn't want them to be a distraction in class. You know, like the presence of a skateboard in a classroom was enough to disrupt the entire class or something, which I think was more a perception than a reality.
They're truly mesmerizing devices. Looking at mine right now.
Yeah, it's just over there, like
just calling out to us. Well, and I always thought that like skateboard lockers were the biggest waste of money you could push on a school if you've got a limited amount of funding improvements for walking and biking and skateboarding to school. Why would you spend money on a device that is literally just a locker?
Yeah.
Well, but when you get off your skateboard, if you're carrying your skateboard, you still have that marker of being the insurgent.
But if you're in sixth grade, you are so the coolest kid in the classroom.
Right, because people know intuitively that it's a useful device, right?
Well, they make backpacks that you can put your board on now, and then you don't even need a skate locker.
Yeah, well, but that was the problem, is that those kids weren't allowed to carry their skateboards around school, you know, then.
Yeah, I know there's a number of Portland schools where they're just encouraged to put them up at the front of the room.
Yeah.
It works out really well.
There's also a couple Portland elementary schools where they're still banned from skateboarding to school. And that was a huge problem, because the Portland public school system and David Douglas school system lets it up to the principals to decide if it's a thing that they want to ban or not. And I don't know what you know about principal attrition, but there's not a lot of long-term principals. So policies set by the principal can often only last a year or two. And because of that, you know, there would be some principals that just absolutely thought it was a completely unacceptable thing for kids to skateboard to school.
I think we're coming back to the theme of how strangely changeable the regulations are about skateboarding. Even in university campuses, there's a great study out of UCLA on the skateboarding regulations at college campuses in the UC systems. And it's huge, the variation. About half a dozen campuses where you're not allowed to skate. It's absolutely against the law on the entire campus.
College campuses?
Yes. I think the UCs and then the UFCs.
I want to take a sec and each of us come up with a way that we could use a skateboard that we couldn't use any other mode of transportation. So here's mine. I'm going to go first. Going to a car to go. It takes me 5 minutes to walk to a car to go. It takes me 2 minutes to skateboard to a car to go. I can pop in the car to go, put the skateboard in the back. I couldn't do that with any
other
mode.
And you don't
have
to do the super awkward, I have my back wheel hanging out of the back this tiny roller skate
that.
Of a vehicle.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Cost me money, too. And
they charge you for putting a bike in?
Well, because you have to take all the time to get it all.
Oh, right.
Right. Yeah. Skateboard, you're in, you're out, you're done, and then you can skate to wherever the next one is when you need it. Okay. Somebody else, go.
Grocery shopping at the Hawthorne Fred Meyer because there is never any open spots on the bike rack. But skateboard, I can just skate right up to the front door and then put it in a cart, nice. Do my shopping out the door.
This is a very good time to mention that Corey cargo skateboards.
Yes.
I don't do that with my cargo skateboard because the trailer becomes a bit of an impediment on the shopping cart, but yeah.
You can take a skateboard onto transportation systems that are not bike friendly. So the New York subway system, you can take a skateboard on, down all those stairs, go straight on, get off, up all those stairs, you're set.
Well, I can't use a skateboard very effectively because I would have to know how to skateboard.
This is a hypothetical.
We can help you with that.
Hypothetically, one of the things I've seen that's really interesting, I work below the Portland Aerial Tram at the Bike Valet, and like all of those people, if they were skating to work, would not need to be using the Bike Valet system. And the main reason that OHSU pays to have the Bike Valet system is because each bike takes up the space of 5 or 6 people on the tram. And when it's only fits 40 people and it's rush hour and you've got a line waiting for it, you know, they really want to incentivize people leaving them at the bottom. So skateboarding is definitely like a cool multimodalism there. So is paddleboat. We have one woman who paddleboats, but
nice. Do you take care of her at the bike valet?
We actually, yeah, we valet her paddleboat. We valet a couple scooters too, which I think is hilarious.
So I can check my skateboard at the tram.
We really will valet anything, like any non-motorized transportation.
Can they bring a pony?
Pretty much.
Awesome.
Nothing that requires feeding. Darn.
What about the joys of skateboarding? Tessa, you had some great statistics about the survey work you did.
Oh, yeah. This was the most surprising and most exciting thing in the survey. So I got about 450 responses back from folks all over the US and Canada. I didn't ask anything in there about how does it feel emotionally to skateboard? How is it for sort of your stress levels, anything like that. It just didn't occur to me. 400 of those 450 people spontaneously added something in the open portions of their survey saying, this is what I do to de-stress. This is for my mental health. This is the thing I do to just like leave all the frustration of being a teenager out on the pavement and then I'm fine again afterwards. So there's this huge skateboarding for fun, but also skateboarding for self-stability and for mental health theme there. And the skaters I've talked to about this, it really surprised me. So I have talked to Corey and I've been checking around with other people and saying, hey, tell me about this. And the most frequent response that I've gotten is, oh gosh, of course, but I never thought about it that way. So in terms of activism, I feel like there is a real potential for skaters to reach out to people like school counselors or mental health care providers, folks like that, to work on casting skating in the role of something that's really, really useful in a deeply personal way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know at least one instance where skateboarding is, I think you mentioned this, being used for PTSD, for soldiers returning from war, as a method of therapy, and apparently it really works well.
Yeah. Well, it has a lot of the things that you're looking for, of like slight stressors, a lot of practice at dealing with those. It gives you physical exercise at the same time. It keeps you mentally focused. I got some survey responses of folks saying that it was that they had been meditating, but then as adults they started skateboarding again. They decided they didn't need to meditate; they would just skateboard.
That's great.
Your thesis managed to have the words emo and YOLO in them.
Academic prize. Corey, you have kids? That's right.
I have one daughter, yeah.
Yeah. Does your daughter skateboard?
She is 5 and she rides on the front of a 5-foot skateboard that I have.
Uh-huh.
We are transitioning to her own board, it is a slow learning curve. So she's just kind of working her way up to, you know, she's getting the balance thing down and can't foot brake or push yet, but we're coming along. She loves it. She's really excited. And it's a wonderful family activity.
She is going to be the absolute coolest first grader.
Yes, that's true.
Well, you know, I'm not the kind of skateboard dad that can do a lot of tricks and stuff. Like, you know, I have friends who have kids that are probably going to get a lot higher cool factor because they can actually do an ollie and things like that. I mean, she's going to be like, I can push really far. I don't know if that's going to impress many of the kids, but you know.
Can I ask a question? You've posted videos of your daughter riding on your skateboard with you, and I've heard you say you can steer now. So does she have the sensation of riding the skateboard? Like, does she have just that native understanding of the mechanics of it?
I like to think she's picking that up. I mean, the kind of steering she's doing is pretty over the top. Like, she's trying to maneuver this 5-foot board. And so she's leaning as hard as she can one way or the other. And I'm basically holding her up while she does it. But you know, I'm glad that she has the freedom, the sense that she's steering. And I think that it's instilling a lot of that sense of freedom that you got on your survey. I mean, you know, I've seen just quick polls done on websites, you know, forums where there's a lot of younger skaters, and the word that comes up most frequently is freedom.
Yeah.
And the sense of freedom, and I can really see that on her face when she gets to steer. That, you know, it just gives you a feeling of freedom. I mean, you're on the board, you're directly attached to the, you know, you're connected to the road, and you're using your whole body. I mean, I love riding my bike too. I ride my bike a lot. However, the skateboard just has some kind of, like, I don't know, just it's so much more inclusive to your whole body. It doesn't feel detached from the road, and I think that's one reason why a lot of people like it.
Freedom comes up a lot with bikes too.
Oh yeah,
all a relative scale.
Yeah,
right?
not to knock bikes. I love my bike. I ride my bike a lot. But yeah, it just feels, there's just something about using your whole body to move that just feels really good.
And there are some other factors there that can be really useful. You can hold things in your hands while you skateboard. You can skateboard to the coffee shop and not have to worry about having a thing on your bike to hold your coffee on the way home.
And when my daughter was learning to ride her bike, I could skate alongside her and stabilize her whenever she needed help. And to this day, when she needs help going up a hill, she asks for a power boost, and I'm there right there with my skateboard and pushing her up the side of the hill, you know. So it's I think there's a lot of advantages to having your hands free.
Whenever I do Sunday Parkways, I actually never ride my bike at Sunday Parkways anymore now, because I'm like, I run my bike in 7-mile loops on a regular basis. But being able to rollerblade on the street is really great. And I've volunteered as a photographer for them a bunch, and I'll essentially hold on to the back of my friend's bike until I get to something good to take a picture of. And being able to have my camera in my hand, like, both me and Jonathan, we do a lot of taking pictures at bike events, like dangling our several $1,000 cameras off with one hand while balancing on our bikes. And being in Sunny Parkways, being able to take pictures like not on a bike, oh my gosh, it makes such a huge difference. Being able to, if only I could skateboard.
Yeah.
There'd be, you know, a better way to hop on and off.
We're here to help.
I'm not sure.
It's really, I think that's something, and that's something I'd like to talk to you about a bit. And I think a lot of people think, oh, I'm over 16. Oh, I'm over 18. Oh, I'm over 20. I can't start skating. I've talked to dozens of people who didn't pick up skating until their 30s, 40s, 50s. You know, it can be taught. It's a lot like riding a bicycle. If you had never ridden a bike as a kid, most people would have a hard time getting started from scratch. There is a bit of a learning curve, but it can be taught. And I think anyone at any age can really pick up skateboarding, provided they stay within their skill limit, you know, their skill levels and their, you know, their capability limits.
That's one reason that I'm actually really excited to at some point start skating. Is one thing that a lot of the folks in my survey talked about was the body awareness and the balance practice and the quick reflexes that they got to practice just on a daily basis skating. I feel like that whole body involvement that you were talking about also means that you're practicing a lot of really good whole body skills that otherwise, compared to a bike, that don't really come through as much.
Let's talk about how bikers and skateboarders should interact when they meet on the street. Corey, you were saying that there's a phenomenon that you've observed many times while skateboarding?
Yeah, there's something I notice when I'm skateboarding, a distance especially, is that sometimes when people see a skateboarder coming, I think the impression is that we are completely out of control and we might hit them. And, you know, people should realize that if someone's out on the road, chances are they've been skating for quite a while and they're pretty comfortable on their vehicle. And the best thing to do is just keep doing what you're doing. If you're walking down the sidewalk, just keep walking down the sidewalk. If you're riding your bike, just keep riding your bike. You know, just like you would interact with any other bicyclist, pedestrian. And really, the skateboarder will probably have no problem finding a way around you, or, you know, letting you know that they're there or something like that. Probably the worst thing that could happen is for the pedestrian or bicyclist to just kind of freak out and suddenly start acting erratically, because as you can imagine, if no matter what mode you're on, if someone you're coming up to starts acting erratically, the chances of a collision go way up.
Right. And you say that this is something that happens frequently when you...
It happens very frequently. You know,
not the collisions.
No,
right. The confusion.
No, yeah. I'm trying to think if I've ever hit anybody. In any case, just the erratic behavior. And I mean, that is actually one benefit of riding a skateboard, I find, compared with riding my bike. Vehicles give me a much wider berth when I'm on the road. I think they don't know what I'm going to do and they're just kind of nervous. So they just kind of give me a lot more space, where when I'm on my bike, they're like, you know, blowing by me with just inches to spare.
One thing a lot of the folks in the survey were saying, that they were just as agile on their skateboard as they were on a bike in terms of their reaction time, in terms of what kinds of things they could get around quickly. So
I would concur. I can maneuver and stop my board about as well as I can my road bike.
Pro tip, skateboards can steer and they can stop.
So, I mean, aside from knowing that skateboards can stop, let's talk a little bit about the skateboarding agenda. What would the all-powerful skateboarding lobby want out of us?
Us bikes. Us all-powerful bikes. How can our two lobbies...
How can you hitch your skateboard trailer onto the back of our bike lobby trailer?
We ride together.
I think the biggest thing to realize is that skateboards and bicyclists really share a nearly identical objective. You know, we use the same facilities. We travel in a very similar way. And there's no reason why we shouldn't be advocating for each other. I think that skateboards would offer a lot to the bicycle community, and that we just have a lot of numbers, and we also have demographics that bicycle communities had a hard time reaching out to sometimes. So I would love to see our resources pooled. I would personally love to see more data. That's one thing that's really suffering. Before Tessa's study, I don't know of any comprehensive study on skateboard transportation. I'm pretty sure there have been studies on what color helmets bicycle riders wear going places. Yet there have not been the basic, like, how many skateboarders are there out there kind of studies on skateboard transportation. So we would love to see more data, more information as to what's actually out there right now.
So thank you, Corey, for continuing, I think, our now 5 or 6 month tradition of saying, we want more studies about X on the Bike Portland podcast.
This is why, though. We're asking for Y, not X, you know? Yeah. We're moving on from X.
Right, here.
All-powerful skateboard lobby can bring a lot of value because it is... has a really diverse age range, and because the culture of skateboarding is one of peer mentoring and of practicing together and improving, not based on competition, but based on building skills and building creative skills that respond to where you are. So in terms of interacting on a really fine-grained level with the built environment, in terms of awareness of things like what streets have bad paving, in terms of being able to talk among folks from really different backgrounds who skate, you can reach out to a lot of folks when you reach out to skateboarders.
Interesting. There are really powerful social connections that are run within the community and can then tap each other.
So that's as research goes, the sort of sociological, ethnographic side of skateboarding is really the only place where there is good research, and it is all pretty darn consistent saying, yeah.
Cool.
Something I'm interested in is, we talk about the conversion rate, that riding transit or walking doesn't necessarily turn you into a transit advocate or a walking advocate, but people that use bikes for transportation are far more likely to have a higher conversion rate where they perceive of themselves as a bicycling advocate. Do you think that happens within skateboarding? Do you think that people end up aging out of skateboarding before they get interested in politics?
It's not a problem of aging out, but I think a lot of skateboarders end up setting themselves up as counter to a lot of the mainstream organizations that they would be working with as advocates, just because there is still this friction around regulation in so many places. So, and this could be why 20 years on from legalizing skating on the street in Portland, we do have a skating advocacy group and a lot of really active skate culture here, but that is still to come in a lot of places. I feel like the skateboard advocacy work is maybe a step behind, 10, 15, 20 years behind where bike advocacy is at this point, partly because there is sort of that sense of being othered and being discriminated against as skateboarders that doesn't really make you want to reach out and make change. It makes you want to hang with your people and like grumble together and then have fun.
Skateboards want data. What else do skateboards want?
Well, another really useful thing I think would be under the current state vehicle code, we are in a gray area. And someday I would love to see the Oregon State Legislature pick this up and, kind of give us a legal status, kind of like bikes have.
To follow up on what Portland did locally, to have that statewide.
Yeah, it puts local cities. Salem recently passed a legal skateboard ordinance. And there's a couple others. Ashland has a skateboard ordinance. I don't know whether we'd view it as positive or negative, but in any case, there are a few cities that have established this legal status for skateboards. But it's difficult when at the state level, it's extremely vague. You know, right now we're somewhere between a push cart and a horse and carriage, you know, as far as our legal status and where, why we're allowed on the road and what our obligations when we're on the road are. And it puts local municipalities in a really tough spot because they kind of have to go out on a limb and say, you know, despite the existence of state law, we're going to just do this.
Data, legal status.
Skatable spots integrated within the city. Two things that I heard come back from the study data. One was the location of skate parks. Right now, cities tend to build a big skate park with a large catchment area. They assume that people from a long ways around will travel to it. And sometimes those skate parks can't even be reached by a skateboard. You have to physically get in a car to get there. Throughout the city, Seattle has done a great job of this. Their Skate Dots program is integrating one skatable obstacle into every municipal park that they redo. And it's great. It puts eyes on the street. It puts skateboarders in places where there are other folks hanging out. It's a great program. The other thing I personally would like to see, because I work in transportation asset management right now as my other hat, as my day job, is pavement quality, which is a municipal maintenance issue and one that does tend to get a fair amount of attention and funding consideration at various times in various cities. Has a huge impact on both safety of skateboarding and where skaters choose to be. If the streets are in really bad shape, the skateboarders are going to be on the sidewalk pretty much whatever, no matter what your regulations say. If the sidewalks are full of tree roots that are pushing things up and they're cattywampus, then the skaters are going to be in the street. And if they're supposed to be on the sidewalk, their safety is really going to come first. And I think that's a perfectly valid decision on the part of skaters. That's something that I think municipalities really need to be aware of, is that the quality of their pavement is going to determine where folks are skating, and they need to help their regulations work with that pattern.
Corey, you want to mention some things that will wow us about skateboarding as transportation for folks that are unaware of the stats?
Yeah. So a lot of people not seeing skateboards as a real practical means of transportation. There's some really interesting stats. For instance, the new 1 mile record was just set, I believe, at 23 miles per hour for a 1 mile distance. I have no idea how they pushed that fast, but they did, flat ground. Recently there was an event in Miami called Ultra Skate, and a gentleman skated, I believe, 284 miles in a 24-hour period, which, if I recall, works out to like 11.4 miles per hour average for 24 hours, which is, again, mind-blowing to me. But, just as an example of ways that these are real, real practical vehicles. I mean, most longboarders out there can cruise along at 10 miles per hour with not much difficulty. And the more accomplished riders can do 12, 13 pretty easily. So it's something to keep in your mind and just trying to break out of that mold that these are just hyper local modes of transit. Although they are great hyper local modes of transit, they can also be used for longer distances.
Cool. And you too. We mentioned the cargo trailer, but we didn't. Yeah. We only briefly mentioned it.
You can haul gear on a skateboard trailer.
Yeah. Yeah. So the disaster relief trials, which I think we've mentioned before on this, but are established as a way to prove that bikes are a very effective way of transporting goods after a disaster. And so there's a lot of obstacles for the disaster relief trials, which is essentially an alley cat for hauling cargo. And you have to like get water and propane and the kind of things that you would need after a disaster.
Big clumsy boxes.
Yes. And you are the only person, I believe, right, that's done it on a skateboard.
I think I'm the only person who's done it on a skateboard. And it was a riot. It was great. I had a fantastic time. I actually came in about halfway in the class that I was in, which is a citizens class. It wound up being 30 miles. And I think I was hauling close to 90 pounds for a good 13, 14 of that 30 miles. So, and it was great. I felt a lot of love from the bicycle cargo bike community. I think they were kind of blown away that I was able to do it at all. I have a custom trailer rig just for this, and it's a little big to be practical every day, but it gets around. And I also did the Eugene disaster relief trials as well. And, it's super fun. I encourage anyone who is interested in this kind of thing to pursue getting into bike events with your skateboard, because I've found it's a lot of fun. And if you really want to travel bigger distances, it's one of the only ways to go, because there just aren't that many long distance skateboard events.
Cool. All right. That's hit on most of our points for the show, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Corey, you've got a low carb tip of the month for us.
Yeah. My number one tip is to always ride within your skills, and to make sure that no matter where you're riding or how fast, you always have the ability to stop. And, learning to stop is really what learning to ride is all about.
Cool. Lily, do you have some TriMet tweets to close us out?
I do. The reintroduction of the TriMet tweets, because we didn't do them last one.
Oh, I'm glad they're back.
So I have a lot of Dr. Jeff again, who is not doing his epic commute, but is still tweeting hilarious things on the TriMet Tech.
Excellent.
Dr. Jeff says, "My bus driver is kind enough to set air conditioning to Arctic in case a passenger board is carrying a side of beef." R.D. Pollard says, "Man, how come no one is sitting in the seat? It's a great seat. Leg room, forward facing, perfect. Oh, there's poop in it." Dr. Jeff again. "Guy next to me browsing Reddit has a fedora and a neck beard. Way to fortify the demographic there, brah."
Nice.
Dr. Jeff. "Learned from old people on public transit. If you wear that expression your whole life, your face really will freeze that way." And Kristen Mauve, "Steak knife behind the TriMet bench. Warms the heart, really."
Oh.
Oh, dear.
And that's our show.
That's our show.
You can subscribe to the show at bikeportland.org/podcast and send us any comments you have at podcast@bikeportland.org.
You can spread the word about the show by searching for Bike Portland on iTunes and leaving a review.
Thanks very much, Tessa and Corey, for coming on.
And you can reach the Northwest Skateboard Coalition at
nwskatecoalition.org.
And you can find my thesis research at skatestudypdx.wordpress.org.
And you can follow me at Anomalily on Twitter.
And you can follow Bike Portland on Twitter and Facebook, too. I'm Michael Anderson, Bike Portland's news editor.
And I'm Lillian Kerbake, your podcast producer. Thanks for listening, and remember to exit through the back.
Pass on the left.
And don't forget to thank your bus driver.
Kick, push, coast. So come roll with me, just a rebel, looking for a place to be. So let's kick, and push, and coast.
Sprocket Studios production.